Clinical validation and denials are crucial to healthcare organizations' bottom line. When a clinical diagnosis or procedure is not validated in the medical record and the claim subsequently denied, the organization can lose reimbursement even if the denial is due to an error in documentation. In addition, the physician comes under scrutiny and the reputation of the physician and the hospital is negatively impacted. Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, Principal in Operations and Quality at Vizient and Practicing Physician. Joining me is Erica Braun, Consulting Director at Vizient. Erica, welcome to Modern Practice.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do at Vizient.
Yeah, I'm a registered nurse by background. I have over 20 years experience in healthcare. More than half of that has been in clinical documentation improvement. That's where I've been for the last 11 years. Prior to working at Vizient, I was a manager of a CDI and inpatient coding team in Omaha, Nebraska, which is where I'm from. So I'm currently part of Vizient's CDI team, where we work with members to start new CDI programs, help them expand on ones that are already in place, and really help them take their programs to the next level, focusing on risk adjustment.
We're glad you're here. So what exactly is clinical validation denials?
So a clinical validation denial is when an insurance company disputes that the patient actually has the diagnosis which was documented and coded during the hospital stay. So that condition was diagnosed by the providers caring for the patient, but the insurance company feels like there isn't enough clinical evidence to support the condition.
So what impact on the hospital do these have?
Yeah, so there is significant implications in the hospital. So these denials were pretty much always downgrade the DRG. They're never going to give us more money for these diagnoses, right? So they pretty much always downgrade the DRG. It may even change the DRG to a lower paying one if they are disputing that the principal diagnosis was not clinically supported. So lower weighted DRGs actually result in less hospital reimbursement, which can be significant. Sometimes they're either even $10,000 or more per case. So those diagnosis changes really negatively impact the observed to expected mortality, as a lot of these conditions that are being denied are risk adjustment codes.
You know, you bring up a very good point. So it's not so much even the money, which is obviously significant, but it's not really reflecting on the good work that the clinician, the physicians were doing, or even reflecting on the great work the nurses were doing to care for these patients.
Yeah, definitely. They're wanting to take those diagnoses off, and it's not telling the true story of that patient.
I get it. So how can CDI help to avoid these denials?
So CDI has a role in assuring that the medical record is complete and accurate. So sometimes there are conditions that are documented that are not strongly supported by clinical indicators. So in these cases, what a CDS can do is query the provider, give them all of the clinical indicators that they would need to ask if that condition was present, or after evaluation as the patient's hospitalization progressed, was it ruled out at the end of the day? They can also do a provider education to help them learn what those high volume denied diagnoses are. And they can also educate the providers on clear and consistent documentation throughout the entire hospital stay, and also to continue that throughout the discharge summary. Then every day they continue to review the record and query for additional missing diagnoses to also strengthen the integrity of that record.
So exactly what makes a diagnosis at risk for denial? That part still is not exactly clear to me.
Yeah, so a diagnosis is at high risk when it's the only CC, which is a complication or comorbid condition, or MCC, which is a major complication or major comorbid condition. So if there's only one diagnosis on there that qualifies it for that higher paying DRG, it's easier for them to dispute that case than it would be another case that had multiple CCs or MCCs on it.
Okay, so I get it. So as an internist, I would say a diagnosis of urosepsis, but I've learned through my experience that it's actually more accurate to say UTI with sepsis. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, definitely. So urosepsis is actually a term that has no code. There needs to be a UTI or it needs to be sepsis due to UTI, one or the other.
Are there other common diagnoses that are usually disputed?
Yeah, definitely. There are top ones. I would say that the top ones are severe malnutrition, acute respiratory failure, encephalopathy, and sepsis. But again, every case with a single CC or single MCC is at risk.
Okay, so let's talk about justice here. So is there anything a hospital can do about these denials? Because it doesn't seem fair to me.
Right. So the hospital can work in a joint effort with coding, CDI, and the providers really to help establish specific clinical criteria for diagnoses. So organization guidelines can be helpful to define conditions such as sepsis, acute kidney injury, malnutrition, and respiratory failure. This criteria can even be incorporated into hospital policies, and the providers are able to use those when establishing the diagnosis. The hospitals can then use those policies to show the insurance companies, this is the policy, this is what we use to make this diagnosis.
So since we understand that this affects the hospital financially, therefore I lose resources to care for my patients, but also it downgrades the level of care that I'm actually offering to my patients and my nursing colleagues, what can a physician do to help?
So when documenting diagnoses, consistent documentation throughout the record is so important. So diagnoses that are only documented just once or twice in the record are subject to high scrutiny. You can also list associated clinical evidence with the diagnosis. So for example, if you document acute hypoxic respiratory failure just one time and that was it, it may not be very strong. But if you document acute hypoxic respiratory failure with increased work of breathing, requiring oxygen at 4 liters, low O2 saturations, and inability to speak in complete sentences, that's really helping to paint that picture of that patient. And if you continue to document that every day, it definitely makes for a strong diagnosis at that point. Finally, it's so important to link conditions to each other. So for example, acute kidney injury due to sepsis. So really getting those diagnoses linked is important as well.
So I've been involved in clinical validation of denials, but mostly through the CDS in which they've asked for clarity, but I've never actually seen all the behind the scenes things that occur. So say now we receive a denial. What do we do next?
So to start, you will want to scrutinize that denial letter. You really want to fully understand exactly what they are denying and why. So often the auditors will use outdated clinical references. They'll also cite outdated coding rules to deny conditions. So it's important for a hospital to establish a solid appeal process with a clinically strong person or team of people to help write these appeals. So these are the ones who should be taking on the appeal with the insurance companies. This really isn't a function for just a hospital billing department to perform. It requires strong clinical knowledge to effectively appeal these. The team doing this, they also need to understand the contracts with the payers and also the appeal process that they have. The team will need to write a clinically strong appeal letter that indicates why the condition actually is supported. So they'll want to use clinical indicators that are documented not only by the physicians and APPs, but also by nursing, dietary, physical therapy, anything in the record to help support your stance. And then finally, we really want to provide and cite the most up-to-date clinical references and care guidelines, along with the most up-to-date coding rules as well.
So Erica, this seems like a lot of use of resources. Is there any way we can partner with insurance companies to avoid these?
Yeah, I have seen some successes with negotiations with payers on criteria for certain diagnoses and add those to the payer contracts as well. So the insurance company and the hospital can get on the same board with what exactly is acute respiratory failure, what is sepsis. So that should cut down on some of those denials.
So this is something you want to track on when these things are occurring. That way, when it's time for renegotiation, you can actually place them on your contract.
Oh, yes, definitely. You want to track all of these denials and look at trends.
That sounds like great advice. So in a nutshell, what can you tell a physician or a hospital administrator to avoid denials in the future?
So the most important thing I can tell someone is really to tell the clinical truth of the patient. So documentation of the entire clinical picture along with the diagnoses really helps to paint that picture of the patient's illness. Clear and consistent documentation is critical. You want to continue documenting those diagnoses throughout the entire hospital stay in the daily notes and in the discharge summary. If a condition resolves during the stay, continue to document it. Just note that it was resolved.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. I want to thank Erica Braun for joining us. And if you'd like to contact Erica, we put her email address in the resource section of our podcast page. And if you have any additional questions pertaining to modern practice or simply want to send your comments, please contact me at our email at modernpracticepodcast.com. We've posted a link to our resource section. And please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thank you so much for listening.